Dangerous Ground, Chapter 1.
The nose of the red and white twin-engine Baron 58 was crunched deep into the bottom of the wooded ravine. Mud and debris covered the cockpit windows. One wing had been sheared off when the plane crashed through the surrounding pines, knocking three of them over. The other wing was partially buckled beneath the craft. The tail of the plane had broken off and lay several yards down the ravine. Will mopped his face on the flannel sleeve of his shirt. 10,000 feet up in the high Sierras, the sun was still plenty warm despite the chill spring air. Either the pilot was unfamiliar with the terrain or he didn't have a lot of experience with mountain flying. Out here, avoiding box canyons is one of the first things you learn.
"Look at this," Taylor said, and Will made his way to him across the rocky, uneven slope. Taylor pointed to the fuselage. "Take a look at those registration numbers."
N81BH. Will's blue eyes met Taylor's. "Now why does that sound so familiar?"
Taylor grinned. "It's the plane used in that Tahoe casino heist last year."
Will whistled long and low.
"Yeah," agreed Taylor.
Just for a moment, he let his gaze linger on the other man's lean, square-jawed features. Will's hair, brown and shining in the sun, fell boyishly into his eyes. He hadn't shaved in 3 days, and the dark stubble gave him a rugged, sexy look, very different from the normal 9-to-5 Will. Not that they exactly worked 9-to-5 at the Bureau of Diplomatic Security. Will's gaze held his for a moment, and Taylor looked away, focusing on the plane's registration numbers again.
"What'd they get away with again?" Will asked, in a making conversation kind of voice. "Something in the neighborhood of 2.3 million, was it?"
"That, and murder," Taylor said grimly. "They shot two sheriff's deputies, making their getaway."
These days he was touchy about law enforcement officers getting gunned down.
"Doesn't look like they got away far."
Will moved toward the open door of the plane. He hopped lightly up onto the broken wing, and for a moment Taylor felt a twinge of envy. He was still moving slowly after his own shooting 6 weeks ago. Sometimes he felt like he was never going to get it all back. The strength, the speed, the confidence he had always taken for granted. He felt old at 31. He walked toward the broken-off tailpiece, and Will, only half-joking, called,
"Watch out for snakes, McAllister."
"You had to say that, didn't you, Brant?" Taylor threw back.
He studied the rim of the ravine. It had been winter when three masked men with automatic weapons robbed the Black Wolf Casino on the Nevada border of Lake Tahoe. They had fled to the nearby airport, hijacked a plane, and disappeared into the snowy December night. Local law enforcement had theorized the Beechcraft Baron crashed in the High Sierras, but the weather and the terrain had inhibited searchers. It was clear to Taylor now that even under the best conditions, it would have been just about impossible to spot the little plane tucked away in the crevice of this mountainside. He glanced back, but Will had vanished inside the wrecked plane. He could hear the eerie creak and groan of the aircraft as Will moved around inside. Taylor worked his way around the crash site. Not their area of expertise, of course, but he knew what to look for. Scattered engine parts and broken glass were strewn everywhere. A couple of seats had been thrown clear and were relatively intact. There was a weathered plank of wood that must have originally been a table or a desk, and some broken light fixtures and vinyl parts of storage bins. The plane could have carried 5 passengers in addition to the pilot. The casino had been hit by 3 bandits. The fourth had been driving the getaway car that sped them to Truckee Tahoe Airport. 4 people would have inevitably left DNA evidence, but the crash site was 4 months old and contaminated by the elements and wildlife. He glanced around at the sound of Will's boots on the loose rock. Will said,
"The pilot's inside. No one else."
That was no surprise. The initial investigation had cleared the pilot of involvement in the robbery. If he'd been alive, he would have contacted the authorities. Taylor thought it over. No sign there were any passengers on board when she went down.
What about an incriminating black tie?
Will referred to the famous narrow black necktie that legendary hijacker D.B. Cooper left on the Boeing 727 he jumped out of way back in 1971, when Will and Taylor had still been investigating soggy Cheerios in their playpens.
Not so much as a stray sock.
Then I guess they weren't doing laundry up there, Will remarked, and Taylor looked blank. You know how one sock always gets lost? Forget it.
It was a lame joke, but once, Taylor would have known instantly what Will meant. Once, Taylor would have laughed.
Parachutes? Will asked.
No parachutes.
None?
Doesn't look like it, Taylor said.
Interesting. The pilot's got a bullet through his skull.
Ah, said Taylor.
Yep.
Their eyes met.
Come take a look, Will invited, and Taylor followed him back to the front section of the plane.
Will sprang onto the wing, reaching a hand down for Taylor, and with a grimace, Taylor accepted his help, vaulting up beside him. The wing bobbed beneath their weight, and Will steadied him, hands on Taylor's waist for an instant. Taylor moved away. Not that he minded Will's hands on him. There was nothing he'd have liked more than Will's hands on him. But this had nothing to do with attraction, and everything to do with lack of confidence. A lack of confidence in Taylor being able to look after himself. Not that Will had said so, but it was clear to Taylor, and maybe it was clear to Will too, which might explain what the hell they were doing up in the High Sierras 1 week before Taylor was officially due to start back at work. Because if they couldn't figure this out, get past it, they were through as a team. Regardless of the fact that so far no one had admitted there was even a problem.
After you, Will said, waving him into the gloomy and rotting interior of the plane with exaggerated courtesy.
Taylor gave him a wry smile and ducked inside.
Jesus, something's made itself right at home in here.
Yeah, maybe a marmot, or a weasel, something relatively small.
Will's breath was warm against the back of Taylor's neck.
Relatively small is good,
Taylor muttered, and Will laughed.
Unless it's a skunk.
3 years they'd been together, partners and friends, good friends. But maybe that was over now. Taylor didn't want to think so, but... His boot turned on a broken door lever, and Will's hand shot out, steadying him. Taylor pulled away, just managing to control his impatience. Yeah, that was the problem. Will didn't think Taylor was capable of taking 2 steps without Will there to keep an eye on him.
And that was guilt. Pure and simple. Not friendship, not one partner watching another partner's back, not even the normal overprotectiveness of one partner for his injured-in-the-line-of-duty opposite number. No, this was guilt because of the way Taylor felt about Will. Because Will didn't feel the same. And somehow, Will had managed to convince himself that that was part of the reason Taylor had stopped a bullet. He clambered across the empty co-pilot seat and studied the remains of the dead pilot slumped over the instrument dashboard control panel. The pilot's clothes were in rags, deteriorated and torn. Bacteria, insects, and animals had reduced the body to a mostly skeletal state. Not entirely skeletal, unfortunately, but Taylor had seen worse as a special agent posted in Afghanistan. He examined the corpse dispassionately, noting position, even while recognizing that animals had been at it. Some of the smaller bones of the hands and feet were missing.
One bullet to the back of the head, he said.
Yep, Will replied, while the plane was still in flight.
Taylor glanced down at the jammed throttle.
And then the hijackers bailed out, he agreed.
This part at least still worked between them. They still could work a crime scene with that single-mindedness that had earned the attention and approval of their superiors. Not that they investigated many homicides at the Bureau of Diplomatic Security. Mostly, they helped in the extradition of fugitives who fled the country, or ran interference for local law enforcement agencies with foreign police departments. But now and then, they got to get their feet wet. Sometimes were a little wetter than others. Taylor rubbed his chest absently.
In the middle of the night, and in the middle of nowhere, Will said. Hard to believe all 4 of them made it out of these mountains safely. FBI and the local law were all over these woods within 24 hours.
Yeah, but it was snowing, remember?
Those guys are trained.
They missed the plane.
The plane wasn't making for the main highway.
Maybe the bad guys were local, Taylor said. Maybe they knew the terrain.
Wasn't the prevailing theory, was it?
No.
He backed out of the cockpit, and Will did it again, rested his hands on Taylor's back to stabilize him, although Taylor's balance was fine, physically and emotionally. He gritted his jaw, biting back anything that would widen the rift between them. Will's friendship was better than nothing, right? And there had been a brief and hellish period when he'd thought he'd lost that. So shut up and be grateful, yeah?
Yeah.
Will jumped down to the ground and reached up a hand. Taylor ignored the hand and dropped down beside him, which jarred his ribcage and hurt like fuck. He did his best to hide the fact.
Most likely what's left of him is scattered through these woods, Will commented, and Taylor grimaced.
There's a thought.
Imagine jumping out of a plane into freezing rain and whatever that headwind was. 18 knots, maybe more.
Maybe someone was waiting for them on the ground.
Will nodded thoughtfully. $2 and an almost $500,000 divides nicely between five. Taylor grunted. Didn't it just? Kneeling by his pack, he unzipped it, dug through his clothes and supplies, searching for something on which he could note the crash site coordinates. It was sheer luck they'd stumbled on it this time. He found the small notebook he'd tossed in, fished further and found a pen, pulling the cap off with his teeth. He squinted up at the anvil-shaped cliff to the right of the canyon. The sun was starting to sink in the sky. He rose. Will moved next to him, looking over his shoulder, and just that much proximity unsettled Taylor. It took effort not to move away, turn his back. Will smelled like sunshine and flannel and his own clean sweat as he brushed against Taylor's arm, frowning down at Taylor's diagram.
What's that supposed to be, a chafing dish?
Taylor pointed the pen. It's that thing, dome, or whatever you call it.
If you say so, Picasso.
Will unfolded his map.
Let me borrow your pen.
Taylor handed his pen over, and Will circled a spot on the map before folding it up again and shoving it in the back pocket of his desert camo pants.
Well, hell, he said. I guess we should start back down, notify the authorities we found their missing aircraft.
Will looked at him inquiringly, and Taylor nodded. That was the logical thing, after all, but he wasn't happy about it. 3 days into their vacation, they weren't any closer to bridging the distance yawning between them, and it would be a long time before they had this kind of opportunity again. By then, it might be too late. Whereas this plane had been sitting here for over 4 months, would another 4 days really make a difference?
Right. We'll rest up tonight and head back tomorrow, then,
Will added after a moment. Taylor directed a narrow look his way, but the truth was he was tired, and climbing in the dark would have been stupid even if he wasn't. So he nodded again, curtly, and tossed the notebook and diagram back into his pack. Will was tired, pleasantly tired. Taylor was exhausted. Not that he'd admit it, but Will could tell by the way he dropped down by the campfire while Will finished pitching their two-man tent. One eye on Taylor, Will stowed their sleeping bags inside the Eureka Apex XT. He pulled Taylor's Therm-a-Rest sleeping pad out of his own backpack, where he'd managed to stash it that morning without Taylor noticing, and spread it out on the floor of the tent. He opened the valve and left the pad inflating while he went to join Taylor at the fire.
Hungry?
Always. Taylor's grin was wry, and so was Will's, meeting it. Taylor ate like a horse, even in the hospital, although where he put it was anyone's guess. He was all whippy muscle and fine bones that seemed to be made out of titanium. It was easy to look at him and dismiss him as a threat, but anyone who'd ever tangled with him didn't make that mistake twice. He was too thin now, though, which was why Will was carrying about 3 pounds more food in his backpack than they probably needed. He watched Taylor feeding wood into the flames. In the firelight, his face was all sharps and angles. His eyes looked almost black with fatigue. They weren't black, though. They were a kind of burnished green, an indefinable shade of bronze that reminded Will of old armor. Very striking, with his black hair. Will's gaze lingered on Taylor's hair, on that odd single streak of silver since the shooting. He didn't want to think about the shooting. Didn't want to think about finding Taylor in a dingy storeroom with his shirt and blazer soaked in blood. Taylor struggling for each anguished breath. He still had nightmares about that. He said, talking himself away from the memory,
"Well, monsieur, tonight the specials are the beef stroganoff, the Mexican-style chicken, or the lasagna with meat sauce."
What won't they freeze-dry next? Taylor marveled.
Nothing. You name it, they'll freeze-dry it. We've got Neapolitan ice cream for dessert.
You're kidding!
Just like the astronauts eat.
We pay astronauts to sit around drinking Tang and eating freeze-dried ice cream?
Your tax dollars at work.
Will's eyes assessed Taylor.
Here.
He shifted, pulled his flask out of his hip pocket, unscrewed the cap, and handed it to Taylor.
Before dinner cocktails.
Cheers! Taylor took a swig and shuddered.
Hey, Will protested. That's Sam Houston bourbon. You know how hard that is to find?
Yeah, I know. I bought you a bottle for Christmas year before last.
That's right. Then you know just how good this is.
Not if you don't like it.
But Taylor was smiling, which was good to see. Not too many smiles between them since that last night at Will's apartment. And he wanted to think about that even less than he wanted to think about Taylor getting shot.
"Son, that bourbon'll put hair on your chest," he said.
"Yeah, well, unlike you, I prefer my bears in the woods." There was a brief uncomfortable pause while they both remembered a certain naval officer, and then Taylor took another swig and handed the flask back to Will.
"Thanks."
Will grunted acknowledgement. He thought about telling Taylor he hadn't seen Bradley since that god-awful night, but that was liable to make things worse. It would certainly confuse the issue, because regardless of what Taylor believed, the issue had never been Lieutenant Commander David Bradley. Taylor put a hand to the small of his back, arching a little, wincing, and Will watched him, chewing the inside of his cheek, thinking it over. It was taking a while to get back into sync, that was all. It was just going to take a little time. Sure, Taylor was moody, a little distant, but he still wasn't 100%. He was getting there, though, getting there fast, because once Taylor put his mind to a thing, it was as good as done. Usually. When he started back at work, he'd be stuck on desk duty for a couple of weeks, maybe even a month or so. But he'd be back in the field before long. And Will was counting the days. He missed Taylor, like he'd miss his right arm. Maybe more. Even now, he was afraid. But there was no point thinking like that. They were okay. They just needed time to work through it. And the best way to do that was to leave the past alone.
"Warm enough?" he asked.
Taylor gave him a long, unfriendly look.
"Hey, just asking."
Will rose.
"I was going to get a sweater out of my bag for myself."
Taylor relaxed. "Yeah, can you grab my fleece vest?" Will nodded, and passing Taylor, took a swipe at the back of his head, which Taylor neatly ducked.
They had instant black bean soup and the Mexican-style chicken for dinner, and followed it up with the freeze-dried ice cream and coffee.
"It's not bad," Taylor offered, breaking off a piece of ice cream and popping it into his mouth. Actually, the ice cream wasn't that bad. It crunched when you put it into your mouth, then dissolved immediately. But Will said,
"What do you know? You'll eat anything. If I didn't watch out, you'd be eating poison mushrooms or poison berries or poison oak."
Taylor grinned. It was true. He was a city boy through and through. Will was the outdoors guy. He was the one who thought a week of camping and hiking was what they needed to get back on track. Taylor was humoring him by coming along on this trip. In fact, Will was a little surprised Taylor had agreed. Taylor's idea of vacation time well spent was on the water and in the sun, renting a houseboat, like they had last summer, or deep sea fishing, which Taylor had done on his own the year before.
"They never did arrest anyone in connection with that heist, did they?"
Taylor said thoughtfully, after a few more minutes of companionable chewing.
"What heist?"
Taylor threw him an impatient look.
"The robbery at the Black Wolf Casino."
"Oh, not that I heard. I wasn't really following it."
Taylor had a brain like a computer when it came to crimes and unsolved mysteries. When Will wasn't working, which, granted, was rarely, the last thing he wanted to do was think about crooks and crime, especially the ones that had nothing to do with them. But Taylor was shaking his head like Will was truly a lost cause, so he volunteered,
"There was something about the croupier, right? She was questioned a couple of times."
"Yeah, questioned, but never charged."
He shivered.
Will frowned.
"You all right?"
"Jesus, Brant, will you give it a fucking rest?"
And just like that, Taylor was unsmiling, stone-faced, and hostile. There was a short, sharp silence.
"Christ, you can be an unpleasant bastard," Will said, finally, evenly. He threw the last of his foil-wrapped ice cream into the fire, and the flames jumped, sparks shooting up with bits of blackened metal.
Taylor said tersely, "You want a more pleasant bastard for a partner? Say the word." The instant aggression caught Will off guard. Where the hell had it come from?
"No, I don't want someone more pleasant," he said. "I don't want a new partner."
Taylor stared at the fire.
"Maybe I do," he said quietly.
Will stared at him. He felt like he'd been sucker-punched, dopey, and off-kilter.
"Why'd you say that?"
he asked finally into the raw silence between them. He saw Taylor's throat move, saw him swallowing hard, and he understood that although Taylor had spoken on impulse, he meant it, and that he was absorbing that truth even as Will was. "We're good together," Will said, not giving Taylor time to answer, afraid that if Taylor put it into words, they wouldn't be able to go back from it. "We're the best, partners and friends." He realized he was gripping his coffee cup so hard he was about to snap the plastic handle. Taylor said, his voice low but steady, "Yeah, we are. But it might be better for us both if we were reteamed."
"Better for you, you mean?"
Taylor met his eyes. "Yeah, better for me." And now Will was getting angry. It took him a moment to recognize the symptoms because he wasn't a guy who got mad easily or often. And never at Taylor. Exasperated, maybe. Disapproving, sometimes, yeah. But angry? Not with Taylor. Not even for getting himself shot like a goddamn wet-behind-the-ears recruit. But that prickling flush beneath his skin, that pounding in his temples, that rush of adrenaline. That was anger. And it was all for Taylor. Will threw his cup away and stood up, aware that Taylor tensed, which made him even madder. And Will was plenty mad already.
"Oh, I get it," he said. "This is payback. This is you getting your own back, holding the partnership hostage to your ego. This is all because I won't sleep with you, isn't it? That's what it's really about."
And Taylor said in the same infuriatingly even tone, "If that's what you want to think, go ahead." Right, Taylor, the guy who jumped first and thought second, if at all, who couldn't stop shooting his mouth off if his life depended on it, who thought 3 months equaled the love of a lifetime, suddenly he was Mr. Cool and Reasonable. What a goddamn laugh. Mr. Wounded Dignity sitting there staring at Will with those wide, bleak eyes.
"What am I supposed to think?"
Will asked, and it took effort to keep his voice as level as Taylor's.
"That you're in love. We both know what this is about, and it ain't love, buddy boy. You just can't handle the fact that anyone could turn you down."
"Fuck you," Taylor said, abandoning the cool and reasonable thing.
"My point exactly," Will shot back. "And you know what? Fine. Let's fuck. Let's get it out of the way once and for all. If that's your price, then okay. I'm more than willing to take one for the team. Or am I supposed to do you? Whichever is fine by me, because unlike you, McAllister, I..."
With an inarticulate sound, Taylor launched himself at Will, and Will, unprepared, fell back over the log he'd been sitting on, head ringing from Taylor's fist connecting with his jaw. This was rage, not passion. Although, for one bewildered instant, Will's body processed the feel of Taylor's hard, thin, muscular length landing on top of his own body as a good thing. A very good thing. This was followed by the very bad thing of Taylor trying to knee him in the guts, which sent a new and clearer message to Will's mind and body. And there was nothing Will would have loved more than to let go and pulverize Taylor, to take him apart piece by piece. But he didn't forget for an instant, even if Taylor did, how physically vulnerable Taylor still was. So his efforts went into keeping Taylor from injuring himself, which was not easy to do, wriggling and rolling around on the uneven ground. Even at 75%, Taylor was a significant threat, and Will took a few hits before he managed to wind his arms around the other man's torso, yanking him into a sitting position facing Will and immobilizing him in a butterfly lock. Taylor tried a couple of heaves, but he had tired fast. Will was the better wrestler anyway, being taller, broader, and heavier. Taylor relied on speed and surprise. He went in for all kinds of esoteric martial arts, which was fine unless someone like Will got him on the ground. Taylor was usually too smart to let that happen, which just went to show how furious he was. Will could feel that fury still shaking Taylor, locked in this ugly parody of a lover's embrace. He shook with exhaustion, too, breath shuddering in his lungs as he panted into Will's shoulder. His wind was shit these days, his heart banging frantically against Will's. These marks of physical distress undermined Will's own anger, reminding him how recently he had almost lost Taylor for good. Taylor's moist breath against Will's ear was sending a confusingly erotic message, his body hot and sweaty. But Christ, he was thin. Will could practically count ribs, the hard links of spine, the ridges of scapula in Taylor's fleshless back. And it scared him. His hold changed instinctively from lock to hug. "You crazy bastard," he muttered into Taylor's hair. Taylor struggled again, and this time Will let him go. Taylor got up, not looking at Will, not speaking, walking unsteadily but with a peculiar dignity over to the tent. Watching him, Will opened his mouth, then shut it. Why the hell would he apologize? Taylor had jumped him. He watched, scowling, as Taylor crawled inside the tent, rolled out his sleeping bag onto the air mattress Will had remembered to set up for him, pulled his boots off, and climbed into the bag, pulling the flap over his head, like something going back into its shell. "This is stupid," Will thought. "We neither of us want this." But what he said was, "Sweet dreams to you too." Taylor said nothing.